The most exciting part of a vacation stay at a home rental? Easy. It's being greeted upon arrival with a rusted lockbox affixed to the underside of a stranger's condo. Yeah, you simply twist knobs, click gears, jiggle it, and then rip it off its moorings, and voila! Your prize is a key to a questionable home rental and maybe tetanus. When you just want to get your vacation started by actually getting into your room, it matters where you stay. At Hilton, we deliver your key right to your phone on the Hilton Honors app. Hilton for the stay.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another Catholic Talk Show podcast. We got Father Rich and Ryan Scheel here with us.
Good morning. Good
morning, guys.
It is a good morning. It's a good morning. Good sunny morning in Hollywood at the Cast Media Studios, our partner. Love these guys. We're going to get started on the topic today, which is...
The craziest Catholic rules you've never heard of.
You're going to love
this. You took
the
words out of my mouth.
Right, I did. Out of your mouth.
Jeez. Now, a lot of people, when they think about the Catholic Church, they think about just the enormity of the amount of rules that the church has. And a lot of people who are kind of hesitant to really get fully involved with the church say, oh, you guys have so many rules and they're all arbitrary or man-made rules. And it's sometimes kind of a talking point to counter the church and the rules, but rules are good. Rules allow for the proper operation of a person within a certain thing. And I think, you know, in religion and faith, there's no difference. That rules are just as important there.
And there's something behind them that speaks to the order of what it is that the rule is accomplishing.
And when you speak about rules, Ryan, you got like how many? 15 kids? 17 kids? There's got to be rules. Is there rules in the Delacrosse house?
Yeah, we put them up on the refrigerator, but they can't read yet, so... So it's Father not Rich, working out very well.
They're not law-abiding citizens of your house.
Father Rich, you stayed at the Delacrosse household.
Oh, so yeah. Have I.
It is a lawless land.
It is.
Lawless the land. Wild, wild west.
So we're going to talk about these rules. Not the ones on my refrigerator, but...
we're going to talk about a couple really cool things. So we're going to talk about... there's only one of the rules. There's only 7 women in the world who are allowed to wear white when meeting the Pope.
What happens if you wear white on accident? What does the Pope do? Get out of here.
Shames you.
What are you doing?
In front of everybody.
You're horrible.
You ever seen the movie?
White and you're coming to see me?
Oh, damn.
You ever see the movie Roadhouse?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man. Swayze. Is that Swayze?
Yeah, doing sweet roundhouse kicks.
Oh, yeah.
Francis can do those too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of what
and
happens.
And his like cape flies around when he does it. It's like the roundhouse.
And in the process, in Italian, he says, give it the boot. It's like a big boot right in your face.
Roadhouse.
Oh, yeah. Pop a boot.
So we're also going to talk about the obscure rule that allows a person to ride a horse in St. Peter's without any fear of reprisal.
Wow.
We're going to talk about why, when the Pope dies, they hit him in the head with a hammer.
That's absurd.
In the head.
We're going to talk about why, during Lent, there's certain animals that you can eat that you would never guess that you're allowed to eat, although you probably wouldn't want to.
Like on Fridays?
Yeah.
Oh, where are they?
Yeah.
Well, it's like probably penitential if it's not something you want to eat.
It's yeah,
you can eat this.
No, it's
like
gross.
A real gamey hog.
Oh, yeah. You're not going to like these.
You do not want to eat those things.
So then we're also going to talk about why, what the specifications are and the rules that you have to be able to adhere to become a member of the Swiss Guard. And then we're also going to talk about a very obscure rule that puts a specific Catholic bishop in charge of the moon.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Fly me to the moon.
Fly me to the moon. I want to wake up where you are. Oh,
man. You're just so good with that.
Oh, man. Yeah, I love it.
You're so good with that.
We got to have another podcast episode where it's just Father Rich singing.
Oh, yeah. I just love it. You got to have a little music in your heart, you know?
It's the bounce of the soul.
Yeah, man. Man.
All right. Do you guys want to get started?
Let's do it, man.
All right. What are we doing first?
So we're going to talk about the only 7 women in the world who are allowed to wear white when meeting the Pope.
And my mother's not one of them.
Is it, before you start, is there a traditional color you wear when you meet the Pope?
So when you meet the Pope, women wear all black garments when meeting the Pope. They have to really have a level of modesty, no exposed shoulders.
Yeah.
The dresses have to be a certain length. They have to wear a black mantilla. Men are expected to wear a dark colored suit with a dark tie.
Interesting.
Padre, you've met a pope.
I have.
And what did you have to wear?
I was wearing a suit and a tie. Oh. And was when I was just before entering the seminary. I was working as a youth director and I went on pilgrimage with the Parish Santa Maria del Mar and went into the Paul VI Hall and met John Paul II in one of his last audiences, awesome. Really. It was an amazing experience.
That's right. Now, if you were there now as a priest, you'd have to wear a cassock.
Oh, a cassock.
Every absolutely. Priest, when they're meeting the Pope, has to wear a cassock. Mm-hmm.
This is really formal meetings.
This is very formal meetings.
Yeah, so this isn't like the general audience because you're thinking, hold on, white? I went to the Vatican. I went there at St. Peter's and I saw that general audience and all of those brides
That's when you have a private or a formal audience with the Pope himself. Not if you're running out and grabbing a pizza with Frankie. You could wear...
Which isn't going to happen.
Columbia shirt.
Or a papal seal shirt. Which, by the way,
with a little plaid.
If you want to get these are on store.youcatholic.com and you can get this one. It's available.
That's nice. Yeah, I like the shirt.
Keys
you're
of
covering
Peter.
It up, though, man. That's what I'm
saying. Mantilla? I'm not trying to... Proud of it. Modesty, you got a mantilla in that pocket? Yeah. Why don't you put it on and put it on your head?
No, it's good. It's a good distinction to make for the listeners.
It is.
Most of them are never going to have an audience with the Pope. I mean, I'm not going to have one.
Yeah, so there's a lot of formality.
Never say never.
Okay.
He might be listening in right now.
That's right.
I really like that Ryan Della Croce. He's got some great commentary.
I'll never see the Pope.
Papa Francesco, if you're listening.
I'm never going to see him.
If you're listening and you want to send an invitation, yes, we'll take it.
Oh, for sure.
We can work it into our schedule.
Yeah.
All right. Even when heads of states or royalty of countries, they adhere to this code. Yeah. When the Queen of England goes, she wears all black and a black mantilla.
Yeah, Katy Perry, she wore black. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was one of the articles on You Catholic. Great. Yeah.
That's where we're going with this, Katy Perry.
No, I mean, I of recent memory, I remember seeing that she wore black.
Yeah.
That's all.
That's what happens.
Because, I mean, I wasn't around when the Queen of England did it.
I mean, in the most recent state visit, President Trump and Melania, they adhered to it. Mm-hmm. Obama and Michelle Obama went, they adhered to it. When President Bush and Laura Bush went, they adhered to it. They all wear black, right?
Are there people outside the Vatican selling black things just in case you forgot?
Carts.
It's like street carts.
Oh, yeah, street carts.
No, you got a private audit? You're going to need this black stuff. Mm-hmm.
There's a Vatican Target. It's all in Latin. Actually, interesting note, Vatican City, in case you do have to buy some black garments from, one of the street vendors, Vatican City is the only country in the world where the ATMs are in Latin.
Hmm. That's pretty cool.
It's true. Inside the Vatican.
That's right.
Can you change it to English? Because I'm going to need to do that.
Yeah, you are. So the seven women in the world who are allowed to wear white, it's called the privilege du blanc. Mm. And it's a privilege meaning that they do not have to wear black when meeting the Pope. And they get the privilege of wearing the white, which is, in Catholic symbology is a symbol of purity. And that is given by the Pope to reigning Catholic princesses or queens.
Mm.
They are the only ones who are allowed to wear it.
Are there any more princesses out there?
Oh, yeah.
There is.
Really?
So basically that if you are a female Catholic monarch, you're allowed to wear white while meeting the Pope. So Queen Sophia of Spain, her husband ascended to the throne in 1975. She's allowed to wear white when meeting the Pope. And actually the Queen of Spain was the first one to get the privilege du blanc back in, 1400s.
Oh, 1400s.
Right. Queen Paola of the Belgians, she's allowed to wear it.
Is this more like tradition or is it really a privilege?
It's a privilege because there's only women who are Catholic female monarchs are allowed to wear it.
Hmm.
Maria Theresa, the Duchess of Luxembourg, the Princess of Monaco, the Queen of Belgium, Queen Letizia of Spain, the Princess of Naples.
I thought I was about to say Queen Latifah.
I thought the same
Queen Latifah.
We're on the same wavelength, Ryan.
She can wear
this
white.
This is a shocker. Queen Latifah, she's allowed to go in there rocking white, and she does.
So. Now, she rocks it well, man. I love that lady.
Now, there's one Catholic queen.
She's the one that rides the horse
in white.
Yeah.
And it's a white horse.
I think in our private audience, we really need to ask the Pope if we can commission a painting of Queen Latifah riding a horse while wearing white in the Vatican.
We'll put it in the archives.
Oh, yes.
Now, hang it up in the Paul VI,
Queen Latifah. We're in Hollywood, Queen.
Call us.
Yeah, we want you at this table, Queen Latifah.
Yes, that's right. Come on in.
You can wear white around us. It's cool.
Pony in the penthouse.
So there's one Catholic monarch who's not allowed to wear white, because that's Queen Maxima of the Netherlands, and she's a Catholic monarch.
So what's the deal on that?
Well, she married Willem Alexander, the king of the Netherlands, but he is a Protestant.
Ah.
So since they do not have a Catholic marriage, they have a cultus of disparity. Mm. She is not allowed to wear white. So those are the only seven women in the world who are allowed to wear white when meeting the Pope.
Pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.
Interesting.
It is interesting.
I mean, it hasn't given life to me or anything, but yeah, you know.
That's because you can't wear a mantilla, Ryan.
So you guys have both been in the Vatican. Mm-hmm. Yep. How'd you get there?
Plane.
Train.
Yeah. Train.
Automobile.
Rock a horse and ride up into the Vatican.
Dude. I was on a horse one time in my life and I urinated myself. I did.
It was last week.
Me and Queen Latifah were taking a stroll through the hills.
And I was just so excited. We saw the Hollywood sign.
No, it was bad. It was a polo horse. And the guy, he asked the people if they ran him, because they're usually tired and they don't want to. Man, this thing just took off, man. And I couldn't get it to stop. And it was crazy. Yeah.
So when you're on this horse, can you ride it into St. Peter's?
So would you want to do that in the first place?
Why would you not want to do that?
I would totally want to do that.
Dude, do you know how good the story is? Like, yeah.
Oh, my
gosh. Let me tell you a story about the time I rode a horse in St. Peter's. Dude, that's an icebreaker.
I would love to process in for mass, you know, with one of the ancient hymns being sung like on top of a horse. You know what I mean? Like hop off the horse and go celebrate mass.
So there is.
That's liturgically horrible.
But anyways. It's a procession.
It's a procession.
So there is five orders of papal knighthood. There's five of them. These are going back, you know, centuries, right? Mm-hmm. Three of these specific papal orders of knights are allowed as part of their, you know, charter to ride a horse into St. Peter's.
Malta's got to be one of them.
It's not.
It's not?
No. So.
Knights of Columbus.
Bam.
Boom. No. Even if you're a fourth degree knight.
What about the head knight, the supreme knight? Yeah.
So the order of St. Sylvester and the papal order of St. Gregory the Great. They are allowed. Now, these are honorific titles. They're not out there with, you know, a sword and smoting dragons. Like St. George, my patron.
Oh, I love St. George.
That's Ryan George. That's my middle name.
I didn't know that. That's awesome.
True. So it's completely honorific, and it doesn't really come with any responsibilities. But one of the things that it does allow you to do is, and this is directly out of the charter, it's the members have no privileges beyond wearing a decoration which consists of a gold enameled cross with the image of St. Sylvester on one side and the other side of the inscription, and they are allowed to enter St. Peter's on horseback with a saber.
That's pretty cool.
Wow.
That's like a lightsaber?
Cool. Lightsaber.
Luke, I am your father.
Now, it doesn't actually, I don't think you can ride in on a tauntaun. Use your lightsaber, cut them open.
We're geeking out Star Wars.
Yeah, that's right. So, yeah.
That is so cool.
So if you ever want to ride a horse in St. Peter's and, you know, like the other half lives, you got to join the Order of St. Sylvester or St. Gregory.
I'm going to sign up tomorrow.
There was a Parisian chapel that I came across just walking around praying the rosary a number of years ago. And during Christmas, they actually bring in all of these animals from the outskirts of Paris. And all of these parishioners come in and they have a living nativity scene inside of the church.
Wow.
And it's incredible.
Those are popular.
Oh, yeah. They're very, very popular.
But inside of a church.
The way that it's tucked in, though, it's like this little itty-bitty chapel, and it's attended so well. People come from all over the place to come in and sort of see this.
Yeah.
And I still remember that, you know, and they have pictures of it. It was a beautiful experience.
Now, nice. Now, one group that you suspect would be able to ride a horse in St. Peter's but is not able to, probably unless of a dire emergency, would be the Swiss Guard.
Swiss Guard, yeah.
That's right. Now, you know, there's some very specific rules and regulations on who can join the Swiss Guard. Do you guys know this?
Yeah.
Is Ryan fit? Is he able?
Ryan? Nah, I'm sorry.
Sorry, sit down.
Nah,
sit
you are not Swiss Guard material.
Are you flexing right now?
Yeah, he's trying to get all swole on us. That's not one of them.
Trying to flex on us, bro?
For all you listeners, that on YouTube, you can catch that. You know, let me know.
That'd be viewers on YouTube, and they're the ones watching you get all swole on us.
I was talking to the listeners of the podcast, letting them know that they could see that on YouTube.
If you think Ryan Delacrosse right now is able and fit,
comment below.
If you believe he could do it.
Do you just want me to stand the rest of the podcast?
Yes.
Okay.
You're just so tough.
No, seriously, I know a former Swiss guard.
Do you really?
Andreas Widmer. He's one of our clients in it's Catholic University.
Catholic University.
And great, you know, guy. Huge. Six,
very size. Giant, intimidating giant. Man.
Some of those guys are very intimidating.
Yeah. I didn't know Swiss people got that big.
Oh, he's, you know, that's actually one of the requirements. Yeah, so here's the requirements. You have to be a male. They don't have female Swiss guard.
Okay.
You have to be Roman Catholic.
Yeah.
Okay. Of the Latin
Rite.
That's
obvious. Yeah.
You must be a citizen of Switzerland.
Yeah.
We're all out.
Hence the name Swiss Guard. You got any
interesting
information here? Because, I mean, all that seems
just
pretty obvious.
A dual citizen.
You have to be at least 1.7 meters tall, which is about 5'7.5".
Oh, so I got that covered. 6'1".
Yeah. Most people do. Yeah.
I got a Swiss Army knife. Does that count for anything?
No. You must be between the ages of 19 and 30.
Okay.
I'm done.
However, if you're a retired guard over the age of 30 and in an emergency situation, you could be redrafted if you're a former guard if you're over 30. Hmm. You must be single.
Yeah, that makes sense.
However, if the guard is over 25 years of age, he can get married while in the Swiss Guard, but not prior. So you have to be single when you enter. So if you enter at 19, once you hit 25, you can get married as a Swiss guard.
So okay. If you're a Swiss guy right now and you're listening to this, you know, this podcast.
In Switzerland.
And you're checking off all these things and you want to meet nice looking ladies.
Yeah. And you saw how big I was on YouTube.
Oh, yes, my goodness.
You got to be swole. Around like that.
Yeah. Yep. So, I mean, start modeling yourself after Ryan Delacrosse.
Just don't be 40.
But if you get married while you're in the Swiss Guard, you have to commit to an additional 3 years of service.
Oh, really?
That's it. So, all right, let's just back up here. What's the deal? Why are the Swiss guarding and what are they guarding? Like, what, I mean, they wear these things and, you know, you're like looking at it and you're going, how did this start? Why Swiss?
Where did it all come from?
I mean, is it related to the cheese?
It's not related to the cheese.
But do I love
Swiss cheese,
dude?
You look Swiss hungry. You look hungry. So I saw hungry. That in your eyes, dude.
Swiss cheese.
You're like, man.
Now, yeah. I can't confirm this. I have to do a little bit more research on this, but the Swiss guard, you know, the Swiss have traditionally been neutral.
Yep.
Right.
Neutral country. Yeah.
But they're a neutral Catholic country. And because of that, the Pope was able to trust the Swiss as personal protectors of himself because they wouldn't have a political, you know, they wouldn't be supporting this candidate for the Holy Roman Emperor against, you know, this King of France or whatever. They were only dedicated to the protection of the Holy Father. Mm. You know,
good idea.
There was
how long ago did they start?
Been around at least 500 years. Mm-hmm. I mean,
wow.
Da Vinci himself decorated or designed their uniforms.
That's cool.
None of them were white.
The transept of the arm of St. Peter's Basilica in the courtyard, in the plaza, the piazza, you on the left-hand side, there's actually a museum. So if you ever wind up in St. Peter's Basilica, make sure you go check out that museum and check out their history.
That's right. There is a very, very famous battle. It's called the Stand of the Swiss Guard. That happened on May 6, 1527, when Habsburg forces, who kind of were the family that supplied a lot of the kings to the different nations of Europe at the time, they were coming in to invade Rome and to capture Pope Clement because he wasn't supporting their cause in one thing or another. And their troops came in and they slaughtered most of the Swiss Guard. But the Swiss Guard, like, I think, let's see, can't find the number, but there wasn't very many of them, right? Mm-hmm. And they stood up to this army and long enough for Pope Clement to escape outside of a secret tunnel, which we mentioned in another podcast.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow.
Pretty cool.
That is very cool.
SwissGuard.com.
I wish I had Swiss Sign guards all around me everywhere I went. That would be kind of cool.
Yeah, you got us, man. You saw how big I was.
But you're old. You're just old. Too old.
I'm in the Italian God.
Lay around, sleep.
Eat potato chips.
Eat potato chips.
Have a little vino.
All right. You know what else you can eat?
What?
During Lent?
Wendy's.
An obscure Catholic rule gives a dispensation during Lent that you can eat muskrat.
Oh, so it is penitential.
Alligator.
Alligator's not that bad.
No, it's good. It's like chicken.
I mean, we're Floridians. I mean,
it's the chicken of the swamp.
You know those fried alligator nuggets?
They're good. Ooh,
I've had poppers.
The poppers.
Poppers.
Alligator poppers.
Beavers and capybaras.
Beaver.
What's a capybara?
Little mammal-y deal. Pretty cute. Yeah.
Kind of. It's cute?
Ew.
Why would you want to eat something cute?
You ever seen a cow? Cows are cute.
So what's the purpose here? I mean, is it because they know that like this is nasty stuff or what?
No. So it's essentially because of, you know, more antique ways of looking at the classification of animals. These animals were primarily aquatic mammals. So when they were saying you can't eat anything that was, you know, meat on Friday, they were considered, according to the church and the bishops of the time, as aquatic animals. So these are mammals that swam in water. Now, alligators, that's a special dispensation given in Louisiana. But these ones, you know, like in Wisconsin and the upper Midwest, muskrat is a big thing on Fridays.
Oh my gosh. So it's a cultural dispensation, not a penitential.
We should go up there one of those Fridays during Lent and have a little muskrat.
That would be a cool show.
I like that
eating
idea.
Muskrat.
If you want to see us there eating muskrat, just let us know in the comment section below.
Please don't. Please don't.
That'd be pretty gross. I'd do it.
I would do it. I'll eat anything, dude.
Yeah.
I had blood sausage in Spain one time.
That's good stuff.
Well, I like the blood sausage in the UK, but it was like this thin layer of skin and I bit into it and the blood exploded in my mouth.
Ew.
It was kind of like, ugh.
Ew.
Ew.
No, I like the bone marrow stuff. That's pretty good.
Yeah, bone marrow is pretty good.
You know what else you can eat? There was a monastery in the 1600s in France that they found a loophole and they ate penguins, puffins.
Really?
Yeah. Because it was ruled.
I wonder what that tastes like.
It was ruled because their natural habitat is more oriented towards aquatic nature than towards terrestrial. So they're essentially.
So I'm starting to see that thread.
Essentially, they're considered fish or aquatic animals. So they don't fall under the traditional ban of not eating meat on Fridays.
I do wonder what it tastes like. We're going to have to Google that.
A puffin.
Now, you know, if in some dioceses with, large Irish American heritage, they'll also give you a dispensation on a Friday to eat corned beef if St. Patrick's Day falls on a Friday.
Yeah, I've done that many times. That too.
Now, mm-hmm. I'm always torn. I'm like, should I celebrate or, you know?
My thing is if it's a feast day.
Yeah, like St. Joseph falls in.
St. Joseph, the Annunciation. Yeah. You know, these feast days are meant to be celebrated.
Yeah. That's right.
You know, I recall the great 3 years. It was like the golden years of my life and my formation at Ave Maria University. And like everything stopped when it was a big feast day, like the Immaculate Conception or the Feast of the Annunciation. And we celebrated with music, food. It was just a true cultural experience. And we need to bring that back to our parishes, to our families, and really give a sense of we're celebrating here, even in the process of Lent.
Why we're celebrating.
I think Lent, it almost emphasizes the reality of feast even greater because it is during a season of penance.
Yeah.
That's like Mothering Sunday, the kind of concept behind that is.
Yeah, I mean, I we got five small kids, so they're running around like crazy, you know, getting them all at the table and celebrating. It's difficult now, but something to look forward to later. You
as
know,
they get a little bit older.
Yeah, the Bishop of Cleveland would give a dispensation that if you were at the stadium, you were allowed to eat a hot dog on a Friday in Lent, but only if you're at the stadium.
Oh, that's cool.
That's great.
So these dispensations for food are very cultural.
Absolutely.
They're
local applications of either mercy or the encouragement of a celebration or the life of the faith.
I love it.
Mm-hmm.
We got one more that I want to talk about.
Uno más.
Yeah. Who's your ordinary father?
Who's my ordinary? Yeah. Bishop Felipe Esteves.
That's right. So, you know, one of the things with the way the church operates is that all the episcopal areas have an ordinary in their structure and there's rules that help to govern them. Mm-hmm. So in the catechism, the 1917 catechism, the one that was abrogated by the updates in the 60s, there was a rule that any newly discovered land fell under the jurisdiction of the bishop from where the expedition originated from. So that
makes sense.
So that's why, you know, in South America, a lot of those, before they were erected as their own sees, were under the jurisdiction of
Spain.
Particular
Majorca,
bishop
Spain.
The Nina, the Pinta, the Santa Maria.
Hey, that's a great song. I think of like the Diocese of St. Augustine,
that's
too.
That's right.
I mean, because we were colonized by the Spanish as well.
Yeah.
And, you know, you look at how the church governs her missions. It's pretty fascinating stuff.
Yeah. So what happened on July 20th, 1969?
Disney World was built?
No. So but you know, you're not too far off geographically.
Disney World. Man on the Moon.
Man on the Moon.
Talking about Man the Moon. On
that's
moon.
All right.
That's right.
Bam. Bam. Nice, so where did that mission originate from?
Cape Canaveral.
Which is in the Diocese of Orlando.
Formerly the Diocese of St. Augustine.
That's right.
Now,
which the Diocese of Orlando was founded in 1968 or erected in 1968. The mission launched in 1969. And therefore, since the mission originated to the moon of newly discovered territory, the Bishop of Orlando is technically the Bishop of the Moon.
Bishop Noonan. Did you know that?
He was my rector in the seminary. So awesome.
I love this.
I love that guy. Yeah, he's a great guy. Yeah.
You know, and what I think's cool also is you guys know the name of the cathedral down there. What's the name of the cathedral? Mary Queen of the Universe.
No, that's the shrine.
That's a shrine.
The shrine. Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, that's a shrine. Yeah, and that's
an impressive shrine. And that's very close to Disney property and Universal.
We were talking about that last night, weren't we?
Yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful area. There's a nice rosary garden.
So Mary Queen of the Universe comes from is in the same territory with the Bishop of the Moon. It's a very interstellar Celestial. Catholic experience down
there. It's universal.
Wow. So now, but there's a controversy. Now, technically, because the launch to the moon was from a NASA property, does that fall under the jurisdiction of the Archbishop of Military Services?
Ooh. And if was there a to-do about this? They were arguing over it?
Yeah, there was a...
I want to be the Bishop of the Moon, not you. Doesn't count.
Well, let's arm wrestle for it. I'm sticking with Bishop Noonan because I know him personally.
I know the Bishop of the Moon.
So I think, there's a canonical discussion as to whether or not the Archbishop of the Military Services or the Bishop of Orlando is actually technically the Bishop of the Moon, but I don't think either of them have exercised their episcopal rights. So,
yeah.
But, I don't think we're too far
off.
Bored
with it.
No. Yeah.
But what if there were people there?
But if it's true, then the Diocese of Orlando is the largest diocese by land area in the entire world.
Yeah, the entire universe. In all of everything.
Yeah. In all of everything.
Bishop Noonan.
There you go.
Oh my goodness.
He doesn't even know.
He has
no idea. Oh, he knows.
Maybe he knows.
They know. You don't become the Bishop of Orlando and not,
joke around with everybody.
Hey guys, I'm the Bishop of Orlando.
By the way, I'm also the Bishop of Orlando. Shh. Don't tell the military services guy.
And let me build you a church.
Now, the Queen of the Universe Shrine is one of my favorite shrines. They have a beautiful bronze statue, very large bronze statue of Joseph in the, the place where they're in the workshop, right?
Yeah.
And there's this big table, and he's just gazing at Jesus, who's standing on the table, just kind of playing with, a hammer or something like that, which kind of leads to our next discussion, but the gaze that he is staring at Jesus is so beautiful.
It is beautiful. And I love my favorite beautiful area to pray there next to the Rosary Garden outside. Inside, when you walk into Mary Queen of the Universe in Orlando, and if you find yourself in Orlando, guys, make sure by Mary Queen of the Universe. It's a beautiful church.
It is.
And when you walk in, on the left-hand side, there's a little chapel. And a lot of times they'll celebrate, smaller masses, gatherings, but it's dedicated to the Blessed Mother. And what's unique about it is it reminds me of Sagrada Familia in Barcelona, which I've never been to. But there was such effort to create coloring. And there's this beautiful stained glass of all these various colors and shades of blue. And it creates a beautiful setting of prayer.
Ambiance.
That is the ambiance.
Ambiance.
Throughout a lot of history, medical sciences really aren't where they were today. And it was really a lot of times hard to discern if a person had actually passed, whether or not, their heart was still beating or their breathing was so shallow that it couldn't be detected by the kind of spotty medical, knowledge of the time. So when the Pope died, one of the rituals is that the Camerlengo would take a silver hammer and tap the Pope on the head.
Nice.
Three times. Good. Right. And then each time he'd call out the Pope by his baptismal name. not by his, papal name, but by his baptismal name.
Wow.
And if the Pope did not respond after three times, the Camerlengo would officially say, the Pope is truly dead. And then at that point, they would read the De Profundis. Huh. And that was the ritual to guarantee that the Pope was actually dead.
I'm just picturing like the Pope's secretary calling down Thor's hammer. Like,
no, it was a very small hammer.
A small hammer, so it didn't have a...
Now, did you guys ever hear the song Maxwell's Silver Hammer by the Beatles?
McFly.
What song by the Beatles?
Maxwell's Silver Hammer by the Beatles.
No.
Bang, bang, Maxwell's Silver Hammer came down upon his head. Maxwell's Silver Hammer came down upon his head to make sure that he was dead. I secretly think that Paul McCartney knew of that song and wrote it right around the time a Pope had died, and understood that to make sure that someone was dead, you hit him with a silver hammer. So I think Paul McCartney knew that, and Paul McCartney was raised Catholic. Mm. So I think the secret origin of Maxwell's silver hammer is the papal hammer to the head.
Random information from the brilliant mind of Ryan Scheel. That is amazing. No,
but see, you know, there really was the fact that a lot of people died and they weren't sure that they were dead. And it was a massive fear.
Italians, we just kick people in the gut. Right. You know?
That's if we like them.
And you had to make sure that someone was really dead, because being buried alive during the mid-ages...
That was a real thing.
That was a real thing. You know, they used to build graves.
You want to make sure the guy's dead before you put him in the
ground. They used to build graves with a shaft in it with a bell so that you could ring in case you got buried alive.
Oh, that's just weird.
Now, here's some random information. Now, what's the... In the history of the world, what's the second most read Christian document?
Second most read Christian document? Is it Thomas... Is it the Life
Imitation,
of Christ?
Imitation of Christ.
Imitation of Christ. Thomas, yeah.
I was going to say Kempis. The Lives of the Saints.
No.
Thomas Kempis.
Thomas of Kempis.
Yeah. It's a beautiful
one. Oh, yeah.
Now, what's interesting, it's not St. Thomas of Kempis.
It's true.
Why?
Are you asking?
No, I'm telling.
You're telling.
But, you know, it's not St. Thomas of Kempis. It's just Thomas of Kempis. And you would wonder.
Are you listening, Ryan?
I'm listening.
Put your phone down. He's looking at the scores of the Astros game. So, you know, you would think that the person who wrote this amazingly influential book would have found his way to the sainthood. By all accounts, he was a very, very holy and pious man and wrote very influential things.
Yeah.
But, you know, when they go about the canonization process, they exhume the body to see if it's, you know, incorrupt. Well, when they exhumed Thomas of Kempis, they saw on the top of his casket, on the inside, scratch marks. Which they conjectured that he was buried alive. Now, being buried alive is, you know, there's no grounds to not make you a saint.
God bless America.
Oh my goodness. So freaky, dude.
Now, listen.
What is wrong with these people? Now, how do they not know if somebody's dead?
They said that because there are scratch marks on the casket, he was not resigned to his fate and his death and was not accepting with the grace.
Oh,
so they kind of stopped the canonization process there.
Oh, God bless. That's ridiculous.
I just want to beat somebody up.
Now, right some now. Of that's with a silver hammer.
With a silver hammer.
Yeah.
So that might be a little bit apocryphal, but there's probably some truth to something along those lines. Although I think there has been some more, you know, at least I've seen some more people talking about possibly trying to push his cause for along, but that's the story. But so, you know, if he had been hit in the head with a silver hammer, maybe he had not been buried alive and it'd be Imitation of Christ by St. Thomas of Kempis.
Now, what would you have done? I mean, if you're the guy wielding the hammer with Thomas Kempis, would you gonna give him a knock like... I'd say, Tommy,
you still there?
Did they do that back then? I thought it was just with the Pope.
It was just with the Pope, but it was also to avoid that exact situation.
Oh.
Now, they do. John Paul II got rid of that. So now.
Yeah, because you have like, you know, what is it? EKGs or whatever they call it. And you can see that.
Oh, there's so many.
So now what they do is they put a simple,
A nursing school, right?
So now what they do when the Pope dies is they call him by the Christian name. And then if they do not respond, they put a white cloth over their face and then say the Pope is dead. They don't smack popes in the head with a hammer anymore, which, you know, it's a good thing or a bad thing, depending on where you come down on the whole being buried alive.
Poor Thomas.
Yeah.
Mm. Poor Thomas. But you know what? I mean,
that's got to be one of my worst fears, though, man.
It's like, you know, the guy.
Well, you should accept it with grace, otherwise, it's not going to be, you know, Saint Richie Pagano.
I don't think I'm ever going to be entering the canon, especially after this show.
Yeah, I mean, if you do get into that situation and you're trying to dig your way out, don't use your nails. Just punch through. Like Kill Bill, you know? And just try to punch your way through. That way, you know, if you make it out, you're cool. And if you don't make it out, you know, your cause is still open.
Oh, my gosh. How to escape a casket.
All right, you know, and so, you know, those are some obscure Catholic rules, but, you know, the people who say that the church has too many rules don't really understand the rules, the nature of rules, and how rules are not really about limiting a person. They're about freeing a person and giving them a framework and a context in which they can operate in their own safety and for their own maximum goodness.
Yeah.
That's why the church has rules.
And some of them change over time. I mean, it's like, you know, you don't need a hammer when you have technology. So the spirit of that rule the spirit of that tradition still lives, but, you know, we have other means of determining if somebody's dead.
Yeah, and Bishop Barron had a really excellent analogy about how a river, you know, the stronger and deeper the banks are, the faster that river flows because it's confining it and focusing its energy. And I always love that analogy for rules, that it really makes, you know, the stronger the rules, the more focused a person can be. It eliminates things that are distracting and eliminates things that are dangerous to a person. You know, yeah. Rules on a highway are important. They're not to limit speed. They're to maximize safety. And I think that's the understanding of rules in the church that people often miss.
Yeah.
It's not a no. It's a paternal care thing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And when we think about rules too, where would we be without them? And rules,
it'd be freaking anarchy,
it would
Padre.
Be anarchy. And where you wouldn't feel safe and you wouldn't feel secure. And there would be no sense of peace, right? You know, peace is a discipline that we need to work toward. And each of us have a responsibility to build a peaceful world that we envision, that we long for. And the only way to do that is by being disciplined according to the rules that govern us in love and proper behavior so that we can have greater harmony in
the
world.
I'm just thinking about my family right now.
I'm thinking about food at the same time too.
Yeah. No, I mean, I'm thinking about the rules in my family and how they work so well.
That's why it's like just so peaceful in your house.
It's always peaceful.
There's just like a common tone, like a
clang.
You know, I stay at the De La Crosses, and I was just telling Ryan last night that it's one of the places in the world that I sleep the best. And even though it's, you know, these kids are loud, they pull on my beard and whatever, I sleep great there because it's his kids, not my kids.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm like, man, I can go to sleep and those kids can do whatever, and that's on you.
Yeah. There's a sense of gratitude that just overwhelms you.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know.
All right. Yeah. So, you know, those are a little discussion on the rules of the Catholic Church that are kind of weird and obscure. And there's a lot more, you know.
Yeah.
But now we're going to ask you something.
It's time for the
Inquisition.
You did good. You did good on the last one.
I did?
Yeah. We sharpened our pencils. Now this one, we got something here.
Now this just one, so you know, I have no idea what these guys are going to ask me.
I think half of the fun of this segment is that seeing Father Rich's perplexity and almost a little bit of disgust at me when I ask these questions. He's like, what is wrong with you, Shield?
Yeah. Yeah. If you're listening to the podcast, watch it on YouTube. It's a good part of the podcast.
All right. So
YouTube. I'm ready.
You ready, Padre?
I'm ready, Shield.
All right. Now, this one is not so much of a stumper, right? This one's really about practical application.
Okay.
Praxis. The church teaches.
Talking about praxis?
Praxis?
Praxis.
Praxis?
Praxis? Praxis? Not a game.
Praxis.
Praxis. And this is a shout out to Allen Iverson. Dude, yeah. If you're listening right now, you are my greatest, most favorite basketball player of all time.
Yeah,
you know, and Father Rich, he always does this too. He tries to avoid it.
Well, we didn't ask the question.
You're not resigned to your fate, man. You're scratching right now in the metaphorical casket of the question.
Yeah, yeah, that's right. Oof.
Okay, so
I'm being buried alive here.
Murder and violence towards a human being.
Okay,
I think that's clear that that's against the rules of the Catholic Church.
Most death
and natural law,
right there in the Decalogue.
That's right.
Thou shalt not kill.
Now,
don't do it.
Zombies.
Zombies?
What's the morality behind killing zombies?
Just war theory.
What's that?
Just war.
Just war theory.
You know, look, if there's a zombie coming at me or any one of my flock, and as a good shepherd, I'm going to knock that zombie out for good. You better believe it.
Well, how do you know the zombie comes to do harm?
Oh, it's pretty clear.
I think there's stages of the just war.
Have you ever seen theory? Like, a zombie on like
The Walking Dead?
Like The Walking Dead.
I have or a any filter of these, like, on my phone that makes they one.
Trained you into a zombie.
Yeah, these zombies are not left up to their own personal judgment.
The zombie apocalypse. Yeah, dude, I'm laying them out.
Yeah?
Oh,
no issue of killing a zombie.
No issue you might of killing a zombie.
All right, so for all you Catholics out there.
For close combat.
Yeah.
For all you Catholics out there, Padre says it's okay to smote zombies.
Good. So this is the good Catholic job, Padre. Talk show.
Did I get that one too?
You okay, did good on that. I think that was a straightforward.
I was pretty
answer.
Confident. Like, you know,
yeah.
You gotta kill the zombies.
You're getting really confident. I'm gonna have to get I'm gonna have to come up with something real messed up next question.
I always think it's
get me nervous
be good.
Every time.
I know.
Yeah. So thanks for listening to the Catholic Talk Shows. This is Father Rich, Ryan, and Ryan. And we are at Cast Media Studios in Hollywood. And if you want to listen to us on Facebook, Twitter,
YouTube, Instagram. Look, if you go to CatholicTalkShow.com, you can find your listening or watching platform of preference, and you can follow us on all of those.
Just click on a link.
And, you know, again, make sure that you leave comments on how we did on this show, what you liked, what you didn't like.
What you want us to talk about.
Yeah, if you have any ideas,
out there.
Any ideas for episodes or things you'd like us to talk about, you know, send them in. And, you know, thanks everyone for listening.
And even if you want to try an Inquisition.
Oh, yeah. Oh, send in ideas for the Inquisition.
Ideas for the Inquisition.
I'll block Father from reading
it. Ryan Scheel, I'm just so disappointed.
You can't let Father Rich see this, so you have to send it through a form in the website, and we're going to put a secret spot where you can't
I'll just block him. I'm going to shadow ban him.
Yeah.
All right.
Target his IP.
Another good episode, boys.
It is. Absolutely. A lot of fun. God bless you all, and thank you for joining us.
Amen.